dear listeners. Here we are once again, another week and another episode of the podcast. This week, my guest, Elizabeth Jarrett Andrew, I interviewed last June. And sometimes I'm just waiting for the prompt from the universe as to when I should release a guest's interview. There was no denying that this is the absolute perfect week to release Elizabeth's podcast. We're coming up on the shortest day of the year, the 21st, and in this conversation, we talk a little bit about the darkness, how to become comfortable in the darkness, the dark night of the soul, all the good stuff emerging out of the darkness. You'll get the gist of it once we start the interview. But I also wanted you to know she's a prolific author, and she's written several books, among them Swinging on the Garden Gate and Writing the Sacred Journey. In this podcast, we discuss a couple of things that I think might be unfamiliar for some of you. We discuss the book, The Cloud of Unknowing, which is an anonymous work of Christian mysticism, which was written in Middle English in the latter half of the 14th century. No one has any idea who the author is, but it's this really fabulous book that kind of urges the reader to know God in a mystical way. We also discuss a little bit apophatic or cataphatic ways of being in relationship with God. And just a really quick description of what those look like. Obviously, it's a much larger discussion, but mystics find meaning in the apophatic experience of God, which is kind of that they find God to be ultimately unknowable. While cataphatic, those who try to discover God through cataphatic means, they kind of seek a clearer relationship with God by trying to explain it, by trying to delineate it. So hopefully, all of these definitions will help you when you listen to the interview. I really appreciated Elizabeth's conversation, and I loved what she had to share. This week, it's all about dreams, baby, and how amazing they are, and how even when we're children, they can call us to something greater later in our lives. So now, episode 149 of Bite-Sized Blessings.
So anyhow, we're all lining up to go into this cathedral and bearing gifts to offer. And I didn't have anything except for this lemonade. So I was kind of holding back. And then as I entered, someone put a crown of candles on my head that now I think of Saint Lucia, I think she's a Swedish saint, but I don't think I knew about her then. And I walked into the cathedral singing and then died. Describe myself as a mom, a partner, a homesteader. I garden a lot in my little plot in Minneapolis. I consider myself a Christian contemplative. I'm quite serious about my spiritual practice. I'm a writer and a writing teacher who considers writing a transformational practice, and I'm really dedicated to teaching writing as both craft and practice. What else? Seeker, reader, biker, swimmer. Yeah, lover of the natural world.
I really love that you describe yourself as a Christian contemplative, because before I started seminary and got my Masters of Divinity, I dated a gentleman who had just a wall of books about the Catholic faith. And, you know, going into that world, I was led to a lot of other books in Anglicanism. And of course, you know, in school, you read so much about religions from all over the world. But one of the books that I thought had the most fabulous title that is also kind of intimidating is The Cloud of Unknowing. And what I especially love about it is that it's so mysterious.
Yes. It's funny that you should mention that. You know, that's probably among my top 2-3 favorite books in the world. And I just recently ordered a different translation. I think I'm going to read it for maybe the 10th time. But yeah, that's a really significant book to me.
So I have never read it because it it's intimidating.
Oh, it shouldn't be. Me. The author is so fun. He's got a great sense of humor. I can't remember when it was written, the 14th century or something like that. But yeah, he's really colorful and uses such vivid metaphors for prayer. And I think he describes a dimension of the interior life that we just don't hear anymore. And it feels very true to me. So yeah, I would recommend it.
I mean, I think that's exciting because so much of our society and culture in the United States, especially, is absolutely dedicated to avoiding us or helping us avoid access the interior self. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's part of the reason I find it intimidating. I'm scared of where that book will take me. Mm. But I've heard so many people say that it's just remarkable. Mm-hmm. And so how do you experience it? Do you read a bunch at a time or how do you use the book?
Well, you know, it's been a touchstone at certain points in my path. So, you know, I reached a point in my own spiritual formation where everything that I knew about God, what I was taught to think of as God, kind of disappeared. It kind of fell away. And I experienced what I think the vast majority of people experience, which is, is there any divinity out there? Like, there's no evidence. What is it? And yet, in silence and kind of in the emptiness, I still sensed something. And what do I make of that? And it sent me on this trajectory into this whole part of Christian heritage, which nobody talks about in the institutional church, which is like the via negativa, the apophatic. I can't remember if it's the apophatic or the cataphatic journey, but this way of unknowing, this way of darkness and, or, you know, darkness of the soul kind of experience of God. And it's so backwards and illogical and really hard to grapple with. So then finding the cloud of unknowing and St. John of the Cross, especially, were just like these fabulous maps for this terrain that is completely unheard of today, but which felt really true for me. So I've kind of used it as a map to navigate some pretty dark and empty places.
About what you've just said about, you know, kind of turning your back on any sort of belief or any sort of idea that there's credence to there being a God or an energy or a spirit. And even when you were in this space where you thought there was nothing, you still sensed there was something. And I think that's really interesting because just recently I read a science article that was talking about, I forget if it's the zero point field or some sort of really small dimension in space where, you know, scientists had surmised that there was nothing there. But recent revelations have kind of disclosed that there are particles popping in and out of existence at all moments in that field that they thought was completely empty. And I just think there's a really beautiful kind of symbolism or metaphor happening there for the places that we think are the most empty, the most devoid of life, but that place is where all life comes from.
where all potentials are. And I think that's very interesting. So thank you for that. I love it.
Well, it's like dark matter too. There, you know, the majority of the matter in the universe, we can't account for, right? It's like, there's things going on out there we just don't know.
That's what I love. Yeah. Well, you kind of alluded to this already, but I'd love to hear more about, did you grow up in a religious household, or how did that happen? Your journey to where, about what you were speaking of before.
Yeah, I grew up in a liberal United Methodist household. My mother was seminary educated, as were two of my aunts. I know, isn't that amazing? And so, you know, pretty faithful upbringing, definitely churchgoers, but in some ways pretty formulaic, you know, that religion was about showing up for church on Sunday morning. We said grace before meals and prayers before bed, but other than that, no personal devotion, no family ritual, and just the propriety of showing up for church. The church I grew up in was really small and dying, but it was liberal and really welcoming and a great experience for me. So I definitely grew up being nurtured by a church family. And at the same time, like, any sort of personal sense of spirituality or relationship with the sacred was not talked about at all. So it's kind of this odd, you know, like, my parents both had deep faith, but you didn't talk about it and you didn't really show it. So when I got to college, I was like really excited to actually be part of a Bible study and get to talk about faith. And then that's also when I kind of lost my innocence around church. You know, I became a feminist, and I remember being part of this feminist theology class where I was part of the study group, and I was all defensive about the church. You know, like, the church is not hard on women. Like, I was raised in this beautiful church and they totally uplifted me. And one of the members of my group said, you know, I think you're protesting a little too much. And I walked out of the student union that night and kind of was like, oh my gosh, like, my church was so patriarchal and so damaging to women, and in many ways so messed up. And you know, I had it easy because it was a fairly liberal, inclusive, integrated congregation. But even so, I never saw a woman in the pulpit until much later. So in any case, you know, I did a lot of questioning of faith and reassessing my belief in college. So that's kind of the quick and dirty summary.
Yeah. You're very good at the quick and dirty summary. Well, let me ask you, when you were, you know, a kid, did you think you'd become a writer?
I wanted to be a writer starting in fourth grade. I won a contest that with a story called Oh Sister, that I won a gift certificate to McDonald's with. And boy, I was not allowed to go to McDonald's under normal circumstances. So that was it. No, I started keeping a journal in fourth grade, and I think it was around middle school that I decided I wanted to write.
Yeah, that was a little bit of my experience as well. I mean, I grew up overseas until fourth grade. And then one of the teachers in the junior high when I was there was dying of cancer, and quite quickly. And they had a contest to write about the junior high. And in the poem that I wrote, which someone just sent me again, incidentally, just reading it, I won first prize. And it was about this teacher who was also one of our neighbors, you know, as a kid. They lived down the street from us. And I won first prize. And I thought, wow, this is a superpower and I kind of like it. I like it.
Yeah.
And I was also a voracious reader, and I think it benefits if anybody wants to write out there, become a voracious reader and read everything. Read everything. Yes. But it's just a really lovely sandbox to be an adult, to be able to play in that world of creativity and writing. I love it. I love it.
Writing for me was really my my private space. And in some ways, I think of it as my first conscious choice about prayer. You know, I never would have called it prayer as a kid, but in terms of it being just mine and where I could be totally honest and really explore and really play, that was my intimate space.
I mean, I think there's great responsibility for people who write, because I think about, you know, in Genesis, I mean, I always think about the passage that they start, you know, in the beginning was the word. And I'm like, look, there was writing, or there was an oral word that started everything. Like there was creation. And as a writer, you're in a really powerful position to affect and maybe, I don't know, what word do I want here? Encourage people to see a certain point of view. And so one of the things I always think of with my writing is, am I going to put something beautiful out into the world? Yes, it might be silly, it might be funny, but is it going to be a good thing? Because we certainly see a lot of writing that is maybe tends to be negative, or, you know, rhetoric that inspires violence or hatred. Mm-hmm. But as a writer, I always think, is this going to be good for the world? Mm-hmm. Sometimes I think I'm funnier than I am. I think that happens to a lot of people, but mm-hmm. irrespective of that, as a writer, you have a huge responsibility, I think, to bring good stuff into the world.
Yeah. I mean, the pen is mightier than the sword, right? So we really do have, words have an impact. You know, it's easy to think that that's not the case because we're so flooded with words right now. But I think a well-chosen word and a word that's not just considered, but that has come through a process is really, it can be a gift, you know. If the writer's taken a journey in order to shape that word, then it really can provide a powerful journey for a reader.
You were kind enough to send me a couple of your books, and I have one of them right here. It's called Writing the Sacred Journey, The Art and Practice of Spiritual Memoir. And it's really lovely. I've recently made friends with a lot of, you know, I've actually interviewed quite a few people who are writing their memoirs. And I love the stories and details of people's lives, because mm-hmm. everybody's life is completely different. Yeah. What shapes them, what molds them, always different. How it's helped them to interpret the world or figure out what's going around them. It's endlessly fascinating to me. I think human beings are endlessly fascinating. Mm-hmm. And I noted this passage that just kind of took my breath away and was so beautiful. And I thought, I have to read this out loud. And it's on page 33, if anyone cares. But it starts off, who cares? Audience and ego.
Oh, yeah.
You already know, don't you? You already know. You know what I'm going to read. She didn't read books. Zora Neale Hurston writes about her character, Janie, and their eyes were watching God. So she didn't know that she was the world and the heavens boiled down to a drop. And I just thought, oh my God. And then you go on, you say, poor Janie, uneducated, deprived of literature. She thought she was just a woman walking around her Florida town. But each of us is a concentrated universe. Each of us mirrors eternity. And it's so beautiful. Just kind of took my breath away. And I thought, oh my God, it's true.
Yeah.
You know, and what I love about books especially is that what I really love about them when I was a kid, you know, Treasure Island, I felt I was a pirate on the ship. When I, every single book I read, Peter Pan, I felt like I was right there in the middle of the action, out of my life for a little bit, experiencing adventure and having fun with others, you know, whether they were pirates or, you know, one of the books that really affected me when I was a kid was Born Free. The lionesses and the lions and this couple's interaction with them. And so books can transport us to other places, but they can also remind us of who we are, which is really beautiful. You know, some days I was a pirate when I was a kid, or I imagined I was. And so that passage is just particularly evocative because it just reminded me of how sacred I am, how sacred every single person around us is, and that each of us is a universe.
Yeah. And that each of our stories is this, is a portal into the universe's story. You know, I think increasingly today we tend to think that we're all separate and, you know, like that everyone is so different from each other. But reading teaches us the opposite. The reading teaches us that there's this dimension of our being that we share, and that we can slip into a story and slip into the author's shoes or the character's shoes and walk around in their life and actually have the sensory experience of their experiences and gain empathy. Like, it's scientifically proven that we can gain empathy through reading, and that we have the emotional experience of the characters such that, like, we are physically changed because of it, you know? So we have this capacity to enter into someone else's story and find that common humanity, access that common humanity, and then come out again and still be ourselves. So I love that quality of narrative and particularly of personal narrative. Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. There have been several times when I've been on retreats and when we have free time at night, I've grabbed a book off the shelf and I've read some pretty terrible, pretty horrific romance novels. But I was so desperate for something to read that I just made my way through them. And so I'm not saying that all literature is meant to educate us or, you know, I kind of didn't want to be, I wanted to be a pirate. I didn't want to be in the world that the romance writer was writing about. But sometimes desperation makes us do strange things. That's all I'm going to say. Well, I would love to hear any stories of magic or miracles that you've experienced in your life.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting thinking about this impending question because I tend to not classify experiences that I've had as miracles. Although that said, you know, I think just the grass growing is miraculous, or my kid being born is miraculous. So like on one level, the miracle is commonplace. But I do think more in terms of mystical experiences or those thin places in time where, you know, that somehow the veil between this world and the next is really thin. And I've had so many of those. You know, if I dig back into childhood, I could share a couple. You know, I remember being probably seven in our backyard on, you know, one of those round swings that you kind of spin on, and with my feet in the dirt, my toes in the dirt, and spinning around in a circle, tilted back, so like the trees over me were just whirling. So I must have been in some sort of dizzy altered state. but I remember having a memory of being young and making up a song and kind of being transported by that song. And in the, you know, in that moment of swinging on the tree, the song came back to me. I don't remember it anymore, but I remember remembering it. And just the, there was something about, because I was only 7 years old remembering, I must have been quite young when I had made up that song. And there was something about that transport through time that, and like the sun and the trees whirling overhead, that moved me in a way that, you know, I think it opened up this portal for me to time being not what I assumed it was, and that who I was not who I assumed I was, that, you know, I was capable of singing to my future self, you know? So that was a really early experience. And then also when I was quite young, I think before I even started writing, so I must have been younger than 9, I had some profound dreams that continue to shape and direct me. So they were all about dying. Like one, I had to decide how I wanted to die, and I chose to die by fire. And so I walked into this room, and there was all these wooden devices around, and it was filled with paper, which is just kind of interesting. And someone lit a match, and, you know, like, so there was that dream. And but the most significant one was a dream of lining up. So I swam to this island, and when I emerged, all I had was a flask of lemonade. And on the island were all these kids, and they were all lining up to go into this cathedral, all bearing gifts. And I mean, when I think back to this dream, it's just so peculiar because, you know, I don't think I'd been in a cathedral at that age. Maybe I had in New York City, but, you know, like, I was just a small church kid, and I was definitely a Protestant kid, and this whole dream was so Catholic. but I had not at all been exposed to Catholicism. So anyhow, we're all lining up to go into this cathedral and bearing gifts to offer. And I didn't have anything except for this lemonade. So I was kind of holding back. And then as I entered, someone put a crown of candles on my head that now I think of Saint Lucia, I think she's a Swedish saint, but I don't think I knew about her then. And I walked into the cathedral singing and then died. And so you know, these dreams were just so big, so, you know, way larger than my years. And it's interesting how vivid they are to me today, even. So I think in some ways of those as miracles, if you will, or mystical experiences that then set me on a course that has really shaped my whole life. I think that question, what do I have to offer? What do I have to bring? It has really been a big one in my journey. And then also that feeling, I have nothing to offer. I have nothing. But I have a song. So I think they awoken me this interior mystical dimension that then certainly was nurtured as I started writing and, you know, keeping a journal and writing poetry, and then finally kind of blossomed fully once I was in my mid-20s and started being more intentional about growing spiritually.
the things I'm thinking about when I'm hearing your story about your dreams is that it's clear from a very young age that you were called. And specifically, I'm thinking of, you know, the female mystics and their experience of God or having a mystical experience sometimes is like, they use the imagery of the flames, right? It's like fire. And beyond that fire, they don't see anything. It's like this all-consuming experience. And so I find it really fascinating that in one of your dreams, you chose to die by fire. I think that's actually really fascinating, especially if you pair it with your dream about entering a cathedral. I mean, I was listening to you talk about your dreams and I was like, oh, I mean, yeah. I mean, you were called to a contemplative mystical life from the start. These dreams are almost reminding you of who you are or what you're going to do in the future or how you're going to be in the world. And it's just so, the imagery is just so overt.
In hindsight.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just fascinating that it's not like you weren't given a choice about the path that you were to take, but sometimes people aren't given a choice.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And when it happens when you're a child, I think there's a greater greater understanding that there is work. You're going to be doing some work in this world.
Yeah.
Because that spirit, that energy wants to get you young.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel really blessed by those experiences. And, you know, dreams have always been like that for me. But, you know, there are these dreams that kind of a flash and neon, you know, that stick to you and continue to reveal themselves. I feel to me like you can have very mundane dreams and you can have prescient dreams, but then I think these mystical dreams are kind of transcendent, you know, they take you out of the ordinary into your bigger story and, you know, who your true self is.
I do remember a dream that I had when I was about 9 or 10 that completely blew my mind. And it was nothing like that. It was more silly, but I remember waking up and thinking, oh my gosh, I want to live in that world. Mm. Where is that world? It's amazing.
Yeah.
And it was so powerful that I still remember every second of that dream.
Yeah.
Even today. And you know, I think even as an adult, I'd want to go live in that world. But it was absolutely, it's fascinating what our child brains can come up with, but also when you're called, you know, the messages just get really clear, which I find fascinating and charming. So I love that. I love both of those dreams. Wow. And the fact that you remember them so many years later, yeah, I was just sitting here listening to you and I thought, oh my gosh, I kind of feel like I know what's going on here. And thank goodness you remember.
Yeah. Well, I think even, you know, even for silly dreams, when you get invited into a dream landscape or, you know, a dream world, it is like reading a book, you know, like you then have in your cells the memory of that space, and that somehow changes you. Like you can't unremember that, and so you know that that space is somehow it somehow exists, right? So then what do you do with that? But I think that cathedral is in some ways a similar experience for me. Like I know the longing to offer something and, you know, kind of the despair of not having anything. And then just like, okay, well, here I am. I'm just showing up. And somehow in neither dream was death scary. So like, that's like, what a gift is that to have the felt experience of dying from a dream. And it's not, I don't know when I face death, whether that will be with me, but at least somewhere in me, there's the sense that death is not a scary thing and that I can just walk into it and I'll be okay.
Thank you.
Okay, I mean, come on. Could it be any clearer that Elizabeth was called to the church or to serve God or that energy or that spirit at a very young age? My jaw just dropped listening to the stories of her dreams. And honestly, one of the metaphors of kind of, I mean, you could think of it as joining the priesthood or becoming a nun or pledging yourself to a religious faith. One of the metaphors that is used when you transition to fully committing to following that path is that you die to your old life. And so I found her dreams absolutely fascinating because that's what they were telling her, that in the future she was going to die to her old life and take up the mantle of serving God. Thanks everyone for listening. And you know, I love this podcast and I love putting it out. And I'm ever so grateful to you for all of your support. Thanks to Elizabeth for telling me her stories and for trusting me and agreeing to be a guest on the podcast. I need to thank the creators of the music used in this episode, Music L Files and Frank Schroeder. For complete attribution, please see under the episode's show notes. All the good stuff will be there. Please remember to rate and review. You know, I always feel like I'm coming to you begging, dear listeners, but those ratings and those reviews, they are the bee's knees and they help other people find us. As we approach December 21st and the darkest evening of the year, as Robert Frost describes it, one of my favorite poems, Stopping by Woods on a Snowy Evening. As we approach the darkest evening of the year, please do consider that in the darkness are untold mysteries, amazing magic, incredible potentials, and pretty much the beginning of everything. We all can still be scared of the dark, but we can also find some peace with it. And here's where I'm going to say thank you for listening, and here's my one request. Be like Elizabeth. Be comfortable in those dark spaces, those places where the mystery ultimately resides. Be comfortable and know that all life and all energy and all possibility come from those spaces, and that ultimately, perhaps everything you've ever envisioned for your life, it's there too. See you next week for episode 150 of the podcast. And until then, have a beautiful week.